John Fain.
On radio, online and on digital.
Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne
and on ABC Victoria.
Welcome to a special forum on the Conversation Hour. I've invited to the studio two people who are experts in an area about which I know very, very little, and I'm going to invite you to discuss faith with them. I just might from time to time express a view myself, even though I'm not a believer. Tim Costello is the CEO of World Vision. He's a Baptist minister, and he will be at the end of the year stepping aside as CEO of World Vision to become their chief advocate. He's written a book called Faith and joins me here in the studio. Good morning to you,
Great
Tim.
Great to be with you, John.
And Barney Zwartz is now a senior fellow at the Centre for Public Christianity, which I've never heard of before. He used to be the religion editor at the Age newspaper for years and years and years. Barney, good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
What's the Centre for Public Christianity?
It's a Sydney-based think tank which is trying to advocate for Christianity remaining part of the public discourse, which is something I fought for as a journalist.
Was there some risk that it wasn't going to?
Yes, I think there are secularist pressures to make religion purely private, keep it out of the public discourse. We're seeing it in same-sex marriage debates, for example. So I want to maintain a thoroughly democratic approach and keep religion as part of the public voice.
Okay, and to the view that many people hold where you can believe whatever you like, it's just no one else's business and you don't have to ram it down anyone else's throat.
That's a slightly different issue. I'd have some sympathy for that view myself. I'm not trying to ram it down anybody else's throat, but I think that as part of the democratic process, I should be able to advocate my view of what a flourishing Australia looks like, along with a secularist or an unbeliever or a Muslim or anybody else. We should all have that right.
Tim, you've written a book called Faith, a companion piece to an earlier work, which was called
Hope.
So next one's...
Love. Although my wife says I'm not ready to write it yet, and what would I know about it? But there you go. That's the
she
plan.
Should write it then.
She should write it.
That would be something
she'll be all
else.
Over it.
So why did you think we needed another book about faith when pretty much as I read through your book, which is very nicely put together, I might say, by your publishers at 260 pages, it's pretty much saying if you just read the Bible, that tells you everything you need to know.
No, it doesn't quite say that. I think faith is back. Faith is the new black. Most of the world, and this will surprise secular Australia, is profoundly religious. And even with our immigration rates, which are largely from immigrants who are having big families, who are very devout, even Australia, secular Australia, with that demographic time bomb, will become more religious, as we're seeing is happening in Europe. So for those like you who don't have faith, it's an important energy field to actually understand in its imagination and impact on our societies. Going to your earlier conversation, I was just intrigued. In some ways, writing, I was going to do Faith, Hope and Love. I wimped out and wrote Hope first. Everyone believes in hope. I was going to do Love next. Everyone believes in love. Faith is very contested. And one of my staff heard you and Red Simons doing your crossover chit-chat, and who's on the Conversation Hour, John. Red said, oh, the Baptist preacher Tim Costello. And Red said, oh, don't call him that. I like Tim. Don't call him a preacher. And you had an argument about who I was. And I thought, yep, values don't just drop out of thin air. In my case, they come from my faith, which nourishes hope and love. I've got to actually write this. So it's more than just read the Bible and... that's the end of it.
So that's where your values come from. Barney, where do yours come from?
I would have to say mine come from the same place. I'm an adult convert to Christianity, and a lot of my values were formed before I became a Christian, so they would be very similar to your own, I imagine, secular and liberal. But looking back, I realise that they do come from the Judeo-Christian tradition and not, for example, from the Greco-Roman tradition. They, as Tim said, they didn't come fully formed from nowhere. So I would have to credit Christianity with that too.
But you can have sound values without faith. Surely you can see that. You can live a moral life and have good, solid values and care about people, blah, 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 without believing in God. Lots of people do that.
Absolutely. So, I accept that because I think that comes from something called common grace, that we're all created in the image of God. We all have moral capacity. We can all recognize good morality when we see it. But again, it doesn't come from nowhere. How are you going to decide what's good?
you decide what's good on the basis of doing what you, in your heart, feel is the right thing, and that's based on a common shared humanity.
Well, that's what Immanuel Kant said.
Not on something that you think is being mandated or ordered from someone you've never met but think you've met internally.
Yeah. Immanuel Kant said, you know, the two things cause awe, the starry skies above and the moral law within.
And the Bulldogs winning... No.
Yeah, go Bulldogs.
We've all adopted them, haven't we?
Yeah, we have.
Jumped on board. What do you believe in and why? This is a complex one. It can be made simple. You can just brush people aside and say, oh, it's easy, you just believe in the Bible. You believe in the Quran, you believe in the Torah, you believe in the teachings of the Buddha, you believe in, you know, anything and everything. You can believe in, you know, science fiction. Or you can believe in nothing and say, no, we're here and then we're gone, and while we're here, we do whatever we want to. Or you can go the other way. What do you do and why? 1300 222 774. 1300 222 774. Tim, in your book and the parts of it, I haven't been able to read all of it, but I've had a good look through for about an hour last night. There's a recurring theme where you acknowledge that Christianity in a contemporary Australia has to be much more dynamic than it's proven to be in the past.
Yeah, I personally believe it's been a tragedy that we somehow moved from Jesus, who said, love your enemies. I could have actually accepted Jesus if he said, avoid your enemies or tolerate your enemies. But this idea of love your enemy, and even your enemy carries the image of God. Tragic to go from that to Crusades and Inquisition. And I try and explain in the book the compromise Christianity made when it became the state religion under Constantine, and Christians went from being pacifists, refusing to fight in war, to actually fighting with the cross on the shield of Constantine and becoming the chaplains to power. My belief is that that love, that belief that the image of God is in a slave, which early Christians believed and practiced in their churches, is in the disabled, is beyond your tribe and religious affiliation, is profoundly important, and that's right at the heart of my faith.
But you also think that the church now in contemporary Australia, and this is you come to this time and time again, is not in touch with the reality of day-to-day life. So do we need another Reformation? Do we need some kick up the backside for the people who are in charge?
Yeah, I think the Reformation, and I talk about that, was actually as much a protest against corruption and the selling of indulgences and a franchising of guilt.
By the way, I've bought an indulgence just in case. It's the ultimate insurance.
You've got all bases covered.
Yeah, just in case.
You'll get to the great U2 concert in the sky, John.
It was in an op shop, though. And it's not in my name, but I thought it would look good on the wall.
I think people still like the product, Jesus, but they don't trust the retail outlet, the church. And I think Brand Church has been really trashed and has made some really terrible mistakes. But the great thing about the Christian story is, over against the mistakes the church makes, is still that example of Jesus and what that energy, that dynamism, that transforming love is about. And I think when the church gets narrow, anyone who's narrow gets very nasty, that when you actually can open up, and Christian faith opened up to saying the pagan, as they were called, Greco-Roman poor, are as loved by God, carry the image of God, ran the hospitals and schools for them. That's why Christianity flourished and was caring and it was inclusive. When you lose that with just rules, I think you start to lose the original message.
Barney, we've made a number of mistakes. For instance, we had a church leader as Governor General and that ended badly. We've had a Royal Commission recently into abuses by people in all sorts of denominations, mostly but by no means exclusively the Catholic Church. Religion's going through an identity crisis in this country, but at the same time we've got this spiritual vacuum. We've got soaring rates of youth suicide, for instance, and people in rural Australia feeling disconnected. So why is there this disconnection between what is supposed to be providing support to the community and what the community is actually getting?
That's beautifully described, John. I really like the way you put that. Tim referred to the trashing of the church. I mean, the church couldn't sell itself now for love or money. The abuse crisis, moralising, lots of other things that we've done so badly have put us really on the back foot. But that's the leadership. That's the public face of the church. I went with the Archbishop of Anglican Archbishop of Melbourne to Mernda and Cario, two Anglican parishes, and I was astounded at their connection with the community, what they were doing for refugees, for disadvantaged, and so on.
At the grassroots
at
community
the grassroots.
Level.
So I would
in
like
the neighbourhood.
Precisely. So that still occurs, and that's still tremendously important. So it's at the leadership level. I agree with you. There have been real problems there, but I think the grassroots work is still going on, and that will continue to be important for providing a sense of community, a sense of connection, and other things that humans desperately need.
Are you one of those that strayed from religion, or are you one of those, like Barney, who says he's a relatively recent adult convert? Are you one of those whose faith is unshakable, or are you, like Tim, saying that the brand is damaged and it needs to somehow reinvent itself? 1300 222 774. And there is, of course, a difference between faith and religion, Tim. Mm.
Yeah, faith has much more to do with trust, far less to do with I think religion's saying, here is creedal statements where you cross the T and dot the I's. Now, we need benchmarks, we need parameters. I actually preach fairly regularly on Sundays. But faith as trust, and at the end of the day, you know, I was really struck, and quote him in the book by Viktor Frankl, survives Auschwitz, says, the only question was, will we survive? The very few of us who survived, he says, had a much more terrifying question. Survived for what? What actually is it all about? What do I trust? What's a purpose to live by? And at one level, we all exercise faith because we can never quite prove that purpose empirically. It's a faith leap.
I recently had the pleasure and privilege of interviewing the filmmaker Paul Cox, who was terminally ill and knew he had weeks, maybe a month or so to live. And I asked him, what regrets do you have? And what would you do differently? He said, I wish I'd laughed more.
Mm.
Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Yep, absolutely.
I've used that countless times since, particularly with a big birthday when people say, you know, what's it like? I said, well, we should laugh more.
Yeah.
And the other thing he said is, when it all boils down to it, as he stared death in the face with terminal illness, he said, when it all boils down to it, we have only love in our life.
Yeah.
That's all there
yeah.
is. Laugh more and love. I thought that was fabulous.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with God. John and Donald, morning to you, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You've got a Baptist minister, a recent convert, and an atheist in the studio.
Okay, well, I'm on your side. I've got two comments. One, 90% of the wars that have been caused over the history of man have been caused through religion. And the other comment I've got, since I've moved to this small town, but I've seen it in other towns, they all think that they can go to church of a Sunday for an hour, and it doesn't matter what they do during the week, everything's forgiven during that hour.
So you can be a complete unpleasant person. I nearly said a bad word. You can be a complete pig during the rest of the week and absolve yourself each week by going to church.
That's exactly right. And honestly, some of these people, if they saw a bloke who was starving outside their house and they're worth millions, they'd just step over him and tell him to move.
Okay, and that's inconsistent, of course, isn't it? So,
well, absolutely. And I would just say as a counterfact that in levels of giving, and this doesn't go to superiority, but Christians, religiously committed, give far more than people who aren't religious or aren't Christian. And if you have a look at the 25 biggest charities in Australia doing the heavy lifting with the poor, 22 are Christian faith-based. In America, only 10 of the 25 are. In London, only, in Britain, only 3. But let me go to your first point. The violence one is absolutely needing to be addressed. All societies were religious up to the French Revolution. And this mistake of Christianity or any religion baptizing the state's wars, the nation's wars, was a terrible misuse of religion. French Revolution, you get a secular state, but it ended with hundreds and thousands dying. And I wouldn't want to do a body count between religious deaths, which are terrible, inexcusable, and, if you like, atheist deaths from Stalin to Mao to Pol Pot. I think violence is endemic to humans, not religion versus atheist.
Barney?
Yes, it's an argument I hear a lot, and how was World War II a religious conflict unless you accept that Nazism was a religion, and a good case can be made for that?
Nazism was a religion?
Yes, in the same way that nationalism can be a religion. It's a religion without God, but we accept religion can be without God, for example, Buddhism. Religion is notoriously hard to define, John. Every time you try and exclude something, you find that it creeps back in.
But well, if you go that way, everything's a religion. No, Nazism was a political force.
Okay. Well, in that case, how can you blame religion for World War II and the body count of 55 million?
It's in the same way George W. Bush claimed he was acting on the instructions of and on behalf of God. You know, you claim a God-given right to do things. Queen Elizabeth is the queen because God said she should be the queen, for instance.
Is that what you think?
No, that's what they claim. That's why she's the head of a church, because God told her she's the head of the church and so on, and her ancestors apparently. I mean, this is the fiction, the nonsense that we all labour under every day. Australia's only a country. We have a constitution because God has given someone the authority to. What a lot of nonsense. Can't we get rid of this?
And can I say that's exactly what I'm writing against in this book? You know, I think Tolstoy put it beautifully. He said, when the drums of war start beating, the tired old priests will lead out the young men to their slaughter, saying God is on our side.
That's right. And everyone says, well, which God's going to win this war? Because
exactly.
Everyone's claiming to be doing it for their God.
But even when God's not on your side, again, Lenin, Mao's allegedly killed up to 50 million, even when you never invoke God, and Pol Pot and others, we see this same awful body count of violence.
Let's move on. We've got lots of people wanting to join in. Denise on the Surf Coast, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning. It's a very nice topic. I'm a Christian and I believe in God. It's given me great comfort over the years. It keeps me safe. And when I'm in the company of people that are not a Christian, I feel very uncomfortable. And I'm a spiritual person as well. Among people, I feel that there's certain places, if you go, you can feel like you're being attacked a little bit.
Where do you feel that, Denise?
Well, when I went into the family court many years ago to be divorced, you know, it was a 3-day hearing.
3 days?
3 days, yes. Every time I walked into the court area, as soon as I got through the door and put my things through the machine, you know, you empty your pockets, I felt like I was being attacked. So I sort of felt like I'm putting on my armour, I'm not going to be attacked, I'm going to be fine. And it works, you know, I know it does, and God does keep me safe. And quite often there'll be times when I might want to do something and then something in my head says, no, I don't think you should do that today. So I find great comfort in God and being what I am, and I live my life that way. I'm very happy with that. It gives me just so much comfort and peace. So I really enjoy my life the way it is, but it does isolate you a little bit that way. Could you put any point on that?
Sure. Tim, Barney?
Well, certainly right at the heart of any faith that's worth being called a genuine faith is the creation of community. I argue in the book that when we move from being 150 people size hunter nomad gatherers, where gossip could actually tell you who are the freeloaders and who are the dangerous ones, to actually bigger conglomerations of people, faith and religion was the way we actually organised. We said we can't know that person personally, but if they have the same gods, we can trust them still and we can find a way to live together. Right at the heart of, you know, faith is also creating community to avoid that loneliness and anonymity.
But you can have community without religion.
Absolutely.
And you can have, you know, Denise, you can have close friends and people you work with and feel comfortable with and connected to without needing to believe in God, can't you?
No.
You can't?
No. I mean, I do have some friends that are not Christians, and don't believe in God, but I have also some that do. But it's the feeling I get is what causes me the problem sometimes. So it pushes me away because I feel that I'm not comfortable because there's something not right with those people.
No, oh, it's interesting to hear from you, and thank you for sharing that with us. Let's move on. Luke and Baronia, welcome to our forum. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, gents. Look, I was raised in a normal household. I went through a Catholic school and was baptised a Catholic, but always had a knowledge of God, but never, I was never a churchgoer or anything like that. But then when I turned 27, I actually converted to Mormonism, and that was quite by accident. I wasn't something I was looking for. I actually dated a member of the church, and it was through the example of their family that that got me interested, really. It just felt different, and I knew that that's what I wanted for my family. So I think I took a massive leap of faith and actually was baptised into the church. And
how long ago was that, Luke?
That's 10 years ago.
And you're still in the Mormon church?
Absolutely. I'm very active. And look, your first caller said about people who sort of do what they want during the week and go to church on a Sunday. That the thing that I love about the church that I'm involved in now is that I really feel that we try and live our religion every day. Service is a very big part of that. For me, it's improved and blessed my life immensely. And like I said, without even really looking for it, my faith and knowledge of God and Jesus Christ has happened since I've joined the church. It wasn't something that I needed to have to join it. It was something that I've gained as I've gone along. And it was purely just by the example of a family.
And you don't think, Luke, you could have found that? You couldn't have found that any other way?
Look, John, possibly I could have, but
People become very involved in all sorts of community organisations. They become very involved in sporting clubs. They become, on the committee of the golf club, or they get very caught up in doing Meals on Wheels for aged care, or they get caught up in the school committee,
but,
or whatever.
What I would say is the moral compass of a sports club and the moral compass of a church are very, very different.
Sporting clubs with better moral codes than some of the religions that we've got at the moment.
Quite possibly, but I know from my experience that that as time has progressed, I guess the world has gone further away from what churches believe in, and I feel best when I'm around other members of the church too.
That's a recurring theme, Barney. Both of our callers so far, Luke and Denise, both say I feel more comfortable when I'm around people who believe what I believe in.
And isn't that a very natural human attribute? Don't we criticise CEOs who surround themselves with people who think the same as they do, rather than people who gainsay them?
Well, I'm not just being controversial here for its own sake, but I actually find the exact opposite. I find life much more interesting when I'm surrounded by people who aren't all the same as me. Is there something wrong with me, or something wrong with Luke and Denise?
Well, you're talking about interesting.
Well, we're glad you've asked.
Let's open up this one. I mean, I don't want to live my life surrounded by people who are all the same as me. I find that incredibly dull.
Well, I don't either. But as I say, you're talking about life being interesting, and they're talking about feeling comfortable and unthreatened, and these are not quite the same things.
I'll read the top, 10 or however many text messages I can. Live your religion every day by discrimination, ... Stalin, Hitler, Pol Pot, the idea of a chosen people. The quest, says this texter, for utopia, promises of reward, rules that must be followed, a supreme leader, sound familiar, far more in common with religion than logic-based atheism. Not right with these people, yeah, sure, switching off. They wanted an exemption to tolerant speech for the same-sex debate, the same people. It's fabulous that religion can be so important to some people, but once it begins to influence my government, it's overstepped the mark. Why must you be a Christian to believe in God? Christians have made its power a power grab by joining the two things, says Bruce in Coolaroo. The day I get an explanation as to why this supposed God seems it's okay for little children and genuinely good people to die whilst people without a moral compass still walk this earth from those so-called Christians, then I might change my view about God's existence, says Marcella in Coburg. They're all coming out of the woodwork today. I'm uncomfortable listening to this person. Blimey, says Wendy. And God kept you safe, didn't save... Oh, I don't get it. Someone's hair shirt. Anyway, you get the thrust of it. Those are just the top messages coming through. There are pages and pages of them. You're listening to a special forum on the Conversation Hour today, looking at faith. I'm the unbeliever, John Fain. I'm the host. And Tim Costello from World Vision and Barney Zwartz, now from the Centre for Public Christianity, are the two believers in the studio, and we're taking your calls. Barbara in Clunes. Thanks for waiting, Barbara. Good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, and thank you to you, Tim and Barney, for the conversation. It's great. Look, I'd just like to ask Tim
and
Barney...
What about thank you to me?
Oh, sorry, John, and happy birthday. I'm so sorry, and congratulations. Sorry. Look, I just wanted to ask Tim and Barney, I'm a Christian. I no longer fit with any denomination, I don't think, and I don't belong anywhere in a church. But I do think the church and religion, Christianity as an institution is dying, but the faith may not be. I don't think that's a bad thing. And look, I find being Christian is neither safe nor comfortable, and that often my sacred community includes people who are Hindu, who are Jain, who are Jewish, and that isn't a problem for me at all. But with the institution perhaps dying and maybe having to die, maybe the real essence of the faith will come through. And while it isn't comfortable and it isn't safe to be a Christian, perhaps it is also a journey in progress for all of us.
Barney, what do you reckon?
I think that's a lovely comment. I think she's absolutely right that Christianity is not safe and comfortable. That is to misunderstand its purpose in our lives. Sorry, I had another thought, but I've just lost it, so perhaps you can go to Tim.
Yeah, look, I absolutely identify with what you're saying. I think the fluidity of faith is moving beyond the structures, and I wouldn't say it's only church. I think we now don't trust military and trade unions and political parties. Just about any institution that came from the last century, we just don't trust.
Except the ABC.
Except the ABC, and that's because John Fain's on it. But I absolutely believe that the all religion is an attempt to answer permanent, recurring questions. Who am I? What is the purpose of my life? Who are others? How do I relate to them? And I find
but there are answers available to all those questions without resorting to this notion of a God.
There are.
That's been interpreted in so many different ways by so many different people in so many conflicting claims to be special.
And some of those answers, and I write about this in the book, are coming from groups who are atheist or we're rationalist, empirically evidence groups who are now having Sunday gatherings that are very much like a church. I've spoken at one here, the Sunday Assembly, and they say we're going to sing because... we're empirically based people, and the evidence shows that when you sing collectively, endorphins are released and we feel better, so we're going to sing.
Join a choir.
And then I'm asked to speak, and then, you know.
Just join a choir.
And there's lots of ways you can express this, but this is a fundamental human expression, longing.
David in Geelong, welcome to our discussion on the Conversation Hour today.
Oh, good morning, John, and good morning, gentlemen. Look, I just want to share my sort of feelings on this topic. Look, I was baptised a Catholic at birth by my parents nearly 50 years ago. But two main things have led me to not want to participate in the formal Catholic community for the last 20 years. And one of them was the repressive nature of when I was a child and going to school with the nuns and priests at the time. I felt we were all very repressed. All despite there was no physical abuse, there was lots of mental abuse. The second thing was that how rigorous the church fought to legally to not be accountable during the especially during the 90s when they were faced with allegations of abuse. And look, I feel a lot more comfortable with my own faith having made that decision not to be aligned to the Catholic Church any longer.
It's an interesting one. David, thank you. Mohammed in Sunshine, good morning and welcome to you.
Good morning to you, John. I'm very happy actually to take the part of these discussions. First of all, I would like to say that I'm an African Australian. I've got some questions to the believers, not only to the guests who are sitting with you into the studio. Can anyone tell me, please, where is the God? How he look like? What he eat? Where he sleeps? And then if you, for example, tell me that the God says to you that you don't have to steal or do something wrong, so be a good, and that's not a God. That's only the nature of the human beings. I don't want to do it, and I don't want to do it, something wrong. For example, if you have a look at the Bush, what he said, the God tell me that I have to do that. He's a Christian. But at the same time, in the hand, you can see the Saddam Hussein, which is a Muslim, he says that, he said the God told me to do that, and both of them, they're killing each other.
Yep.
If you have a look at the Middle East also, each and everybody believes, some other people, Hamas, which is the Islamic, what they called, they're killing each other.
All in the name of God, aren't they, Muhammad?
They're all in the name of God. Yeah. All in the name
so
of
which
God.
So which God is the right one?
Which God is the right? Do we have an African God? Do we have an Australian, specific Australian God? Do we have American God? Do we have a Hindu God? How many gods do we have into this world?
Okay, let me put that to both Barney and Tim.
Absolutely important question. For me, God isn't a Father Christmas figure in the sky who rewards or punishes. God is actually the force of divine love, of existence. For me, my faith comes from I don't know how non-existence gives rise to existence. Non-being gives rise to being. How even when we can explain all the synaptic nerves and chemical and electrical impulses in the brain, we won't be one step closer to understanding consciousness and this soul search for deeper meaning. So in my faith, that's where I start, and I write in this book about certain transcendent spiritual experiences I have had. I hope I write about them generously, but I'm writing authentically about what I've experienced without then prescribing a remote God who sets the world up and retires.
Barney, do you want to add anything?
No.
Text messages. Thoughts on progressive Christianity, asks Andrew in Doncaster. Fabio in Footscray says, God is an ever-receding pocket of scientific ignorance. Great quote from an astrophysicist. Simon in Ringwood East contributes, God saved me. Just think about the narcissism of that statement. All of those he chose not to help, says Simon from Ringwood East. When you say, God saved me, think about the narcissism. Religious debate. Oh, my imaginary friend is better than your imaginary friend, says Charles in Geelong. And exclusive claims of Jesus to be God in the human flesh, question mark, says Peter at Hoppers Crossing. Who cares which is the real or right God? There's room for them all as long as you keep their place, i.e. in your private life. And while God was keeping you safe, he took my wife, leaving me with 3 and 1-year-old babies. Don't answer with that rubbish. God works in mysterious ways, says someone who's obviously suffered a terrible loss. Let's keep taking calls. 1300 222 774. Barney Zwartz now with the Centre for Public Christianity, and Tim Costello, CEO of World Vision and Baptist Minister, are my guests in the studio. I'm John Fain, and this is The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. It's 21 minutes to 12. Graham in Oakley, morning to you too, Graham.
Good morning, John, and happy birthday. And Tim and Barney, to both of you, I love your work. John, I like your work. but let me address faith. I heard you talking to Philip Adams last night, Tim, and one of the things that struck me was your expression of the so-called dark nights of the soul when you had doubts. And I found that very refreshing because, to me, faith is... it's a state of unknowing. If you know, you don't have faith. You just know. You have certainty. And this is one of the things I find most distressing about religion, unquote, that, like some of your earlier callers, they're not existing in a state of faith. They're existing in a state of imagined certainty. And that's what I have an issue with. No one's died and come back and told us what it's like on the other side. No one that I have met or known or heard of has seen an angel. And I'm not just picking on Christianity. The same applies to lots of religions. And I personally find it's terrifying but exhilarating to just exist in a state of unknowing and wonder what on earth is going to happen when I die. Wonder, goodness, how does all this happen? You know, how does gravity work? All sorts of things. How do babies know to love their mothers and all sorts of things like that. I just find the unknowing and miraculous aspects of life are just enough. I don't need someone's version of what they promulgate as a certainty, which I think belongs to an earlier iteration of humanity. I think our brains and minds have moved on from that. And I'd like you to address that faith versus certainty, and you know, you only have to move a little bit further from certainty to literalistic interpretations of scriptures and all the horrors that can bring. So, gentlemen, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, so with Philip Adams, I was exploring what I trust, and I said, as I do in this book, I'm both fed up by faith for all the reasons that most of the listeners have actually articulated, and I'm fed by faith. I find that faith does expand and nourish my hope and my sense of love. And that's a mystery. I said last night that faith and doubt are actually Siamese twins. The opposite of faith isn't just, in my view, a doubt. It's actually not caring, not asking the question. I do think, as you've gone to mystery, that that's profoundly true. We are trying to actually trust and be loyal to something which remains mystery. I'm a mystery even to myself, and my faith does actually give me some insight into that.
John, the one bit of preparation I did for this thing today was to hunt out an 8-line poem. May I read it? It's very
sure.
Short. I too live with doubts of all sorts, and I think everybody who is honest lives with doubt, whether they're a believer or not.
Mm-hmm.
This is a poem by Denise Levertov on the idea. I had grasped God's garment in the void, but my hand slipped on the rich silk of it. The everlasting arms my sister loved to remember must have upheld my leaden weight from falling, even so. For though I claw at empty air and feel nothing, no embrace, I have not plummeted. I think quite often that's all faith leaves us with, but it is still profoundly important for me and for many.
Rosalind in Dandenong, welcome to our forum.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I admit I'm a Christian, and I find great personal strength and comfort from my faith, but I also agree with what John said, that a lot of people who go to church are hypocrites. But if you follow John's argument and say close all the churches down, or all people go to church as a hypocrite, so therefore churches are no good, you should ban all gymnasiums, because there's a lot of people who go to gyms and have memberships who are fat slobs and don't do a thing. So therefore, gyms are a failure and you should ban them all.
Yep.
But most people who go to gyms don't claim to be perfect. They claim to be trying to get better. And the same goes for most people who go to church.
Yep.
They don't claim to be perfect. They claim to be aiming to be like Christ.
Yep.
You don't want to be like your next-door neighbour. You want to be like Christ. Otherwise, it's just a photocopy, you know, a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy until
sure.
It becomes indistinct.
But, Rosalind, is there a difference between my appetite for chocolate on the one hand and my fundamental way, the way my values impact on fellow human beings on the other?
Well, I could argue the fact that as an ex-nurse, yes, definitely.
But no,
with the bane of most nursing staff's life.
Sure, but the importance to my position in my world, how I see myself and my relationship with other people, that's not something which I can just regard as a work in progress, like my fitness regime, which is a work in progress.
No, admittedly.
So I can't go around being utterly brutal and behaving like a psychopath and say, but that's all right, at least I'm trying.
No, I'm not saying that that's what a Christian should do either.
But I can pig out on ice cream and say, I'm going to do better tomorrow.
Yeah, but I'm just following that argument. You don't, because I'm a Christian, doesn't mean to say I claim to be perfect. It doesn't mean to say that I'm going to go to church on Sunday and be holier than thou, and then Monday I'm going to snarl at the paperboy and sort of swear at the man who took my parking spot. I mean, if you're going to do it properly, you're going to take your faith with you throughout the week. It's not something you pick up and put on Sunday and then take off for the rest of the week. Was it Gandhi who said that he'd be almost be persuaded to be a Christian because he fully believed in it if only Christians followed what they preached.
Good on you, Rosalind, and thank you. You've expressed it well. Rick in Geelong wants to join in. Good morning to you too, Rick.
G'day. Happy birthday, John, and all the best for the family coming.
Thank you very much.
First-time caller.
Doubly welcome, I have to say.
Thank you. Tim, you mentioned the importance of humans finding this meaning, but surely that has to be tempered with an understanding of the significance of human beings themselves. If you accept all of the evidence that points towards Homo sapiens being a very, very limited recent representative of the truly wonderful, massively diverse life forms on our planet, how can you possibly believe in the concept of a creator invented by humans to provide them with some solace that's just completely meaningless, completely unrecognised in any way by any of those other forms, much broader forms of beautiful life that surrounds us?
Yeah, in this book I talk a little bit about Brian Cox's series, and I really like his work, where he says, the great ascent we have made with scientific discovery is the ascent to realise how utterly insignificant we are, what a minor planet we are in billions of galaxies off Broadway. And now, one level, that is an answer, but it doesn't actually satisfy me because it's still the planet I occupy, and I still have this, as humans do, drive to try and understand consciousness, to try and understand existence or being, how cells just wake up, inanimate cells, and develop consciousness. And I am perfectly open to a whole range of explanations, but my faith confession is that I think it's actually easier to believe in this divine force than simply the inanimate cell that just happened to wake up.
Text messages. Thank you indeed for your call too, Rick. The next person who says it was God's plan that took my 17-year-old son for cancer, I will explode, says Rob in Essendon. Tim Costello, you're so comforting and challenging at the same time. More Tims in the world, please, says Sean. Why are you wasting your time talking about supernatural beings? Get thee to a shrink, says Anne in Inverloch. The rabbit in Donnie Darko is just as real as any of those proselytising about the existence of a god and as crazy a notion. Why do people need to believe in something outside of themselves and the objective world? Sad state of affairs, really, says a John. My neighbours are Christians and what good people, says this texter. And why do you need faith religion to act like and be a good person, claims Greg from Layla. The next ignoramus, I've read that one, sorry. Rob, you nearly got a second go because you've rephrased it, and it's the same point, though. Carolyn says, I believe religion is man's interpretation of who and what God is, but there's only one God for whom all goodness comes. The question of whose God is right is invalid. The Jews, the Muslims and Christians all believe in the same God, the God of Moses, says Carolyn. So your text messages continue to come through. It's 12 minutes to 12 on The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne, ABC Victoria, digital radio and the World Wide Web. I'm John Fain. I'm the non-believer. Tim Costello has written a book called Faith, Embracing Life and All Its Uncertainty that's just been published. He's the CEO of World Vision Australia. It says on my sheet here, Tim, that you're stepping down at the end of the year.
I'm stepping down from being CEO, yes, 2nd of November. For 13 years, I've managed a wonderful organisation, and here's a little secret I can tell you now. I actually hate management. I can't believe I've done it for 13 years.
Have you?
I have. You're jet-lagged out the back of Africa, 4 hours out from a city on your mobile phone, sorting things out back in head office. It's very demanding work. Look, the step sideways to chief advocate feels like the sweet spot, not the slog, much more in line with my passion to make a difference.
So you take on a different role, but you continue with World Vision.
That's right.
And Barney Zwartz is our other guest from the Centre for Public Christianity, and you may know his work from his many years as religion editor at The Age and Sydney Morning Herald. Coral in Cheltenham. Hello, Coral.
Oh, hi, John, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
My major concern is that, I don't know whether there's an energy, an entity, which you all call God, there or not. But my major concern is with all religions, they are all man-manipulated. Think about it. When Moses came down from the mount, he had 10 commandments. He was running a rabble. He had to find some way to control them, okay? So he issued the 10 commandments, which is a mandate for healthy living. Similarly, you know, sort of with the Jews, not eating pork, being circumcised, no water. The pig at that stage was a venomous animal. Terribly, terribly simple rules and regulations to help people live to their best ability. And you go on and on and on. All of these things are man-made. Now you have synagogues, you have churches and so on, with people standing up in the pulpits and saying, thou shalt not. It's actually become a regulation, a controlling of life. So on that side of things, I'm really angry, because if there is an entity and a force, then it should be a benevolent entity and a force, right? And everybody should try and live to their best ability, instead of which they're all put into these little canisters, if you like, of thou shalt nots. Then you have the money involved in various religions. They preach about compassion, they preach about helping other people, and they don't practice it. I mean, the Catholic Church alone, and a lot of the Church of England places around here, the land they own, you know, they don't pay taxes, and the money they spend, I mean, these grandiose robes they wear for ceremonies and so on and so forth. I appreciate that in the beginning it was worshipping God, right, and beautifying, but now it's got to a stage where it's big business.
Okay, and you think it's lost its way. Good on you, Coral, and thank you for having your say. We'll whip through a few more callers and then I'll get back to my two guests. Rodrigo in Preston, you're next. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, John. Great show. You're very brave in bringing all these big subjects into the conversation.
Brave or stupid?
Yeah, a bit of both, I guess. It's well, I came to Australia 7 years ago. Now I'm Australian. I was born in a Christian country myself, and so in Chile, in South America, really, like 90% of the populations are all Catholics. So up to before I left Chile, that was all I knew. So if I was born somewhere else, I would have been something else, right? I had my first communion, my confirmation. I did all that stuff. I was very devout. I really believed, like I truly believed in that there was something out there, that it was a God that they was guiding me, and I asked him stuff and he responded and stuff. And then when I started traveling around, I really realized that's not all it is, you know what I mean? There's a lot of people believing in all this stuff. But things that caught my attention when I was in Chile, for instance, one day on TV, a mother, his child was killed by a drunk driver, and he came on TV. She came on TV and said, "Well, God took him," you know. Yeah. And that was amazing. I would have just chased the guy and killed him, right? But she had the. That's one of the things that fate gives you, right? That resiliency, that hope of something out there. When I came to Australia for work, they sent me to do, my boss was a Scientologist, and he sent me to do some courses in there. And you won't believe the amount of people that go and do those courses. Well, first of all, they get a test of you, like a personality test, right? Million questions, and they kind of like point out what are the areas that you are better or worse in your life, right? And then, so they send you to these courses, and these courses are meant to fix your weaknesses, right? Communication, time management, etc., etc. So for people that in drugs, in like alcoholics, that they need an answer to their life, they need to like kind of like get into a right pattern, the right way. It's amazing. And they fix their lives, and then they believe, they truly believe that they owe the church back, And I'm telling you, my boss was one of those. I mean,
okay,
he has
Rodrigo,
given the church thousands of dollars just for that. You know what I mean? Because
I do know what you mean, but I do want other people to get a say as well.
Oh yeah, sorry, man. I went too long. Have a fantastic day, guys.
All righty, good on you, and thank you for your call, Domenica in Ripponlea. Good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, John. Buon compleanno to you.
And
John, I'm
grazie.
Yes, and I'm glad. Grazie. Prego. I'm so pleased that I got through, and all the very best to all the family, and the fact that you're going to be a grandfather, and you won't know yourself, of course, once you are a grandfather, because I am a grandmother and I know about it. Likewise, I like to think that I know a little bit about Catholicism, but I really don't,
yeah,
because I was born in Italy and therefore everybody was so-called Catholic.
Yeah.
But I can really honestly say, and a lot of people have already said what I wanted to say so far, that what one is brought up with, to believe the forms of showing are quite different to actually really believing. And I, for one, I don't profess to be a practicing Catholic at all. Many times in my lifetime, I've turned my back to the Catholic Church, but I can say that I am a Christian, and I thank Father Tricarico, blessed his soul, and Father Frank Martin, who died last year, actually, and who really sort of, have reinforced my belief in God, and that we really, in spite of everything that's all man-made, I believe that there is a God, and there is, we have a guardian angel that guides us, and therefore I like to think that I've got some spirituality that helps
still
me
there
on my journey.
All right, Domenica, I'm going to have to move on because we're nearly into the news. Thank you indeed. And in fact, I've often paid tribute on this program, Tim and Barney, to one of the most big-hearted people I've ever met. Years ago, 84, 5, 6, 7, 30 years ago, I was a lawyer at Fitzroy Legal Service, and the Catholic priest, Brian Cosgrove, across the road at the Catholic Church in Brunswick Street, Fitzroy, was worth more than all the social workers in Fitzroy put together. He did more good on his own and with his church than all the agencies and all the welfare workers in Fitzroy back in the 80s when things were pretty rough, wasn't gentrified like it is now. And yes, there's a lot of good people who do extraordinary work, but that's got nothing to do with whether you believe in God or not in my book. But either way, final words to each of you. Barney?
I think that David Hume had it right when he said that reason is always and ought to be the slave of passions. I think that people rationalise the opinions they already hold when it comes to religion, and that it's very hard to move beyond that. So that when we talk about certainties, we're kidding ourselves, and that can happen on both sides of the fence.
Tim?
Yeah, I think the heart always understands and sees before the head understands and sees. And I think this mystery that I write about of spiritual experiences and trying to understand how faith nourishes me is an open conversation without it excluding people like you who say, I can't believe that. I think I'm just trying to open that up.
Tim Costello is the CEO of World Vision Australia until November, then he becomes their chief advocate, and his new book is called Faith, Embracing Life and All Its Uncertainty, and it's published by Heidi Grant. Barney Zwartz is a senior fellow at the Centre for Public Christianity, formerly the religion editor with Fairfax, the publishers of The Age newspaper. Thank you for all your calls. Thank you for all your texts. Tim, Barney, great to see you both. This has been The Conversation Hour on your ABC.
The Conversation Hour podcasts are available at abc.net.au/Melbourne. Subscribe now and you'll receive automatic updates with special guests, interesting interviews. It's a bit of fun. You'll be mad not to subscribe. abc.net.au/Melbourne.